Welcome to Alchemical Dialogues, an Amber Light podcast. Join Dr. Henry Cutella with musicians Moksha Summer and Jamal Wade Hines of the band Hudost for their discussion on the power of music to bring us together. The information provided on this website and these podcasts is for informational purposes only. Nothing on this website and in these podcasts is intended to be a substitute for medical, health, therapeutic, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed by the guests in these podcasts are not necessarily the opinions of Amber Light International and anyone associated with this organization.
Welcome, Moksha and JJ. It's so good to have you with us.
We are happy to be with you.
Yes, I didn't think we were going to be able to do this. It took so long to get us together. And we got you just before you're starting touring again in earnest, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We just had, not this last weekend, but the weekend before, we had our first real show, which was sold out and hosted by Florida NPR. And it was pretty amazing being with people again. It was still spaced more than normal and had big open doors. So there was fresh air coming through the space. But we are very thankful to be vaccinated and to be able to actually be with humans again.
Did you have your full band, or was it just you and JJ?
So because of COVID restrictions, what we decided to do was we're touring as a duo until late August. And then that's when, I mean, most larger arts organizations had been very hesitant to do bigger events still. So we're doing more outdoor concerts and smaller events until the end of August. And then we're doing, from that point on, we're doing some of the bigger concert series and festivals with the full band again.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I thought after we said hello, we would actually start with playing one of your recent releases. So for those of you that are here for the recording, you get to see a video clip. And if you're just listening to the audio, you'll get to hear it. So this is Hudost.
I had a dream. I shed the last tear in the world. Everyone was looking at me. I had the thought.
Nothing's meaningless, the dream is my own evenness, and
not a dream.
Great. It was so good to hear you.
It was kind of cool watching that video because we haven't watched it sort of since we put it out. So it's great. It's great to see that crew of people. And I have to say, like, you know, in the last year, even in isolation, those have still been the people that we've worked with, people in that, and the people who have sort of kept us happy and sane and in the musical process through this strange time.
Only an hour away in Nashville.
You're name dropping big cities that are close to you in the country there. Nashville's in Tennessee, last I remembered, right? Not in Kentucky.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
that's true. It's true. Funny about that, right?
Yeah, funny.
Right. We wanted to start with Rise Up because for those of you who don't know who Dost, their music really has a foundation in what I would call spirituality without getting too pious about it, and social action and social justice. You know, when I heard Rise Up and one of the other cuts we're going to play from that album, to me, that really comes through. So I thought a nice way of introducing people who don't know you very well is to talk a little bit about that song, but also how it ties in with your view of music in your life and in life in general.
Yeah, that's a great question.
That one's from our last album, by the way.
That one's from our last
album. The other one you're talking about is from our upcoming album.
Yeah, the other one you're going to share is actually not out yet, in terms of other than video form, but we'll talk about this one for a moment. You know, that song, I can just share from my own personal experience, like music for me is the most powerful and straightforward spiritual path that I have ever had. And the other thing that has been the most effective for my own personal growth in terms of like spiritual practice in action is doing advocacy work and doing work in affiliation with nonprofits that we feel are on the path that we're drawn to. And the interesting thing with that song, so in the last year, during this whole COVID time period, we won the Independent Music Award for Social Action Song. For that song, we wrote it with the lead singer of Jars of Clay, who's in the video, Dan. And the thing that is that we met him on Capitol Hill doing advocacy work. We were there for the nonprofit One that we do a lot of, you know, I think you've all experienced and even been part of some of the things that we've done through them, whether it's letter writing or phone calls or doing that kind of thing, but basically doing advocacy work on behalf of people living in extreme poverty whose voices are not heard. And that's where we met Dan. He was doing the same kind of work and we just connected in regards to that, and then kind of discovered each other through music, which was a really, really beautiful shared discovery. And that song we wrote with Dan, and he ended up actually like co-producing our last record. And then on this new album that is coming out this year, almost all the guys from Jars play on it, and we did it.
Another guitarist from Jars co-produced it.
We did it like basically in their studio space in Nashville, and it's pretty amazing working with people who not only have a shared musical vision, but have a shared spiritual path that is in action as nonprofit work, because it feels like a very unique kind of alignment and vision. And, you know, the thing that we've discovered through a lot of this work, especially the combination of music and advocacy work, is that it's some of the most effective way of actually fostering positive change. People really resonate with it. And I use resonate as an intentional term there, because music really creates that literal resonance that then creates other ripple effect.
Talk a little more about that, because one of the things that I think we still joke about it, it's really hard to categorize your music.
Yeah. And
what do you call it now? You try to categorize it?
Neo, folk, retro, pop, art rock.
That's a new one. I haven't heard you say that
before. You got the world in there.
World Sufi kirtan. It's a big long run on.
I think a lot of people, when they think of music and any sort of carrying a spiritual message, you know, it's gospel, it's yours isn't exactly subtle, but it isn't in your face. It's so open and it's so inclusive, which is why it's hard to pin it down in a category. It feels like embedded in the kind of music you've created, which is, I still think it's really unique to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a blessing and a curse to have it be like that. The curse side is that for marketing purposes, like, people hate us. But if in the live experience, people love us because they can jump right in. And that's why I think that we do really well, like, on the festival circuit, because people are ready to just, like, be present and dance and hear it and be part of it and love the range that we do with it. But if anything, what we learned was, like, one of the reasons we've chosen the path of being committed independent artists is that we get to decide what we do and have as much integrity as we want in the process and not have to shy away from taking risks or being continuously exploratory. So,
and that's a hard road.
Yeah,
it is.
Staying independent in your business.
Yeah.
And you've just never veered from that.
No.
You've worked with some famous people.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow you kept your independence and you're succeeding and having fun and bringing a lot of joy to people. I love the way you put it. You're right. I'm not a festival person, but the few times I've seen you with your big band, it's really hard for people to resist jumping in, either with their voices. I mean, you encourage it, but also it's inviting. And you're inviting is people. So it's the music, it's the vibration, it's the atmosphere that you set. And when I think about spirituality and music, there's a lot of music that claims to be spiritual and it's a turnoff. Or it's the kind of spirituality that only, I don't know another word to put it, it's the kind that makes you think of transcendence, that you're getting out of this world to some better place. Your music wants to bring it into life and to make it part of everyday life. And you don't shy away from that.
Thank you for hearing that. I can just share that, like, you know, being on the spiritual path too is not an easy road necessarily, because you're going to look things in the face. And one of the biggest triggers for me has been exclusivity of any kind with that, or a sense of hierarchy within that. And I think that when that also then applies to music, that's what just sort of pushes me and I think others away. And the most moving spiritual people that I've encountered are ones who are not saying, I am a spiritual person. They're people who are simply living the work. And if anything, that's what I hope that we can do through our music too.
That's one of the reasons we like circle back to the guys from Jars of Clay too, and working with them, because, you know, I've known them since they were popular in the 90s, but I kind of, when I met him, I was like, oh, it's that guy from Jars of Clay, that 90s Christian band, which I was always like the last thing I would want to listen to. But then you start listening to their music, they're kind of like U2, you know, U2 are people know they're Christians and the message is contained within the songs, but they're not preaching. So we started realizing that about them as well. And, you know, like, oh, they do a lot of work in the world. The next couple months, we're playing at a progressive Christian festival in the mountains of North Carolina with Dan from Jars. You know, we've been hanging out with a lot of progressive Christians. And for me, growing up Southern Baptist, it's been nice to, oh, there's some Christians that are actually cool. And, you know, that are actually listening to the basic message of the kingdom is here on earth, you know, like the work is to be done here kind of thing. So
the Jars guys, their career was really messed with because they bravely spoke up on behalf of the LGBTQ community and equal rights and did not shy away from any of that when they got a lot of scorn from the more evangelical Christian crowd? And
they were banned, you know, when their early career, they were, they vocally regret now publicly. They were like toured with Billy Graham or Franklin Graham, you know, as the opening act. And they're like, we should have never done that kind of thing. But they were banned from Christian bookstores, Christian radio, because how dare they speak out for equality? As soon as we started realizing that about them, we're like, hey, there are people.
Right.
But it's very interesting. I mean, that sort of brings it back to the fact that, like, a big part of what motivates us is interfaith work and interfaith dialogue, too. And allowing that to be an open space through music as well, because I think music is able to introduce people to other ways of seeking that is non-threatening. Like, I mean, you don't know how many festivals in the Deep South we've played where we get people singing Zikr with us, you know, and they may have no clue what they're singing, but they feel it. They feel it, and then they can discover after what it is that they experienced. And it kind of is a door that's already open for right. them. So that's, you
so
know.
So for people who may be listening and not on the call, Zikr is a Sufi practice of, usually it's in Arabic, but we've broadened it. So, and you speak many languages. So it's repeating sacred phrases. George Harrison was one of the first ones to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was a story I read that Christians were singing along My Sweet Lord and applauding him until he started saying Krishna, and then they shut it off.
Aww.
You get people to go along and say Allah, and they sing right along with you. So you've been together a long time now, and you're a couple, and you're working together. Tell them a little
over
bit.
20 years.
I was going to say 85 years, but I think it's more correct.
20 years. And, 20 years this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's 20 years you've been together this year?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Isn't cool. that wild?
That's insane.
That is wild. Right.
Yeah.
I can't remember where we first met. It was either in New Lebanon or in Canada, but I'm remembering Canada.
I remember. Well, we first met at the Abode. And I remember simply because Nate was there too. And
Nate is my stepson, Kathleen's
yes.
son.
And he and Habiba and I formed a flock of goats. We yes. were goats through the whole thing. So I remember that clearly, but I'm not sure where where you first met him.
I don't know either. My clearest memory was in Canada. And I had just started to try to be a little more public about playing my amateur guitar and learning to do that. And I remember hearing your voice. And I just wished that you could sing something that I wrote. And I don't know if I was ever brave enough to ask you that. But then when you helped us later on, when Kathleen and I started to put some music together and you agreed to, you helped mix it and play instruments and you did some backup vocals. I really treasure the memory of you helping us that way. I don't know if I ever told you this, but the first CD that we did that you helped us with, we got to use the hall at the Abode in New Lebanon, New York. And, you know, I'm a real amateur and I trusted you and JJ and Kathleen's, whose voice is beautiful. So you had a sore throat, but you thought you could do it. And you had all these tricks that vocalists use. But what really impressed me is that we walked in and we decided we were going to do this, right? All of a sudden, I don't think I ever told you this, your demeanor changed. And mm-hmm. you went from the moksha that I know to all of a sudden, every word was measured and you were careful. And I would look at you and JJ and I could see why musicians sometimes want to kill each other. And you were being so careful. And as we were going, I could feel the pressure of it's not coming out right. We have to do it again. And it, but I don't know if I had ever told you that story that your words changed the pace of your wording and you were being so careful. And that has really stuck with me. I still think about it and laugh about it.
That's interesting. Well, I will say that our creative process has become much more relaxed over the years too. You know, I mean, that's one of the things is mm-hmm. like at first, when you're really first, you're discovering your creative self and even the process of how to guide others in that. there's a preciousness about it. And then the more you do it, it's like any practice. The more you do it, the more you're aware that it's practice and you can just be part of it and relax into it. And I mean, I remember like, oh gosh, the first songs that I wrote, I was like, oh my God, these are precious gifts from God. I cannot touch them or change them in any way. And now I'm like, you know what? Here's this whole channeling that comes through. Now let's play with it. Let's, you know, like there doesn't have to be the same level of attachment. And that's a wonderful liberation when that happens, yes. You know, in the process. So
that's a wonderful way of putting it. I've had a similar experience in the work that I do. I remember when Kathleen and we were first talking, her voice is so inspiring. And to hear her sing some of the things that I composed. And once we were talking to somebody and I heard Kathleen say, I'm exposing my soul.
Hmm.
And I realized, wow, because it's like she as a vocalist could cover up any mistake I would make playing my background guitar. I realized what was being asked of us and of artists anywhere, that when you put your soul into it and then you share it, oh yeah. So to hear you say that progression, that's really helpful. And it also changed the way that I look at art and talk to people about art, not just music. But it really made me realize this is a real gift that people are sharing. And whether I resonate with it or not, it's a gift that people are sharing and it's coming from the depth of their being. And I really have grown in respecting that. And it's added to my appreciation of the art.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw what I recently like shared in our last newsletter or on Facebook, but you know, when I first was singing publicly, I would have so much anxiety about it because it's a very vulnerable place, you know, and it's, I think when we first open ourselves to that, I mean, for one thing, it is a channeling. Even when it's the show, the concerts where everything is well rehearsed, et cetera, there is an opening to a bigger force that comes through. There is no question. That is what is experienced through music. And that just alone demands a certain level of openness and vulnerability. And in the first couple of years that I was performing, I would get so anxious and there would be all this lead up to play concerts that in retrospect were not even really that big of a deal. But what happens in the process is incredible strengthening, and it's not a closing. It's not like we develop shields or anything like that. But if anything, it's this refinement of how that energy source comes through and the ability to be vulnerable and strong and humorous at the same time, as opposed to just vulnerable. I look back at the progression over the years of how that is. And now I see, like, I think it's like any path we can have this, but being in the role of like performer, you're really literally under the spotlight in terms of how that is and how it's actually seen by others in that process. So I think with any path we can start out malleable and vulnerable and then lead to a place of much deeper strength and humor too, really. Like humor is a really important part. I mean, when I, you know, like I look back, if I screwed up a song when I was first performing, I would just be a mess afterwards. Now, if I screw up a song, I just laugh and go, let's start over. Like it's not a big deal. And I've realized that the fact is whoever's present can just be part of the process. They don't have to be excluded from the process or viewed as just viewers. They can be seen as like, oh, welcome to this, where none of us are perfect, let's start over, you know? So it's really interesting to witness how that plays out though.
Yes. I think we have a shared philosophy about what we think about spirituality. There's an authenticity that comes through with that. And it takes practice to be comfortable with being genuine, being who you are. And yeah, you still try to do, you know, we have all of the feelings that we all have, but that sense of genuineness really comes through in your music and it comes through in who you are, and being able to share that and get comfortable with that, I think allows other people to give it a try themselves. That's the gift that comes through yourselves as performers and as a couple and its people, but also comes through with the music. The music really allows it to get in even more.
Thank you.
So tell people a little bit about your background.
Well, what part?
Well, you were a little girl once upon a time. And somehow you had a great voice. And
well, I mean, in terms of history, I can just share, I grew up in a very art-based family. So I was exposed to it really young. My mom and dad were both professors, but also my father was a writer and my mother a dancer and visual artist. And, you know, even as a kid, there were always like really interesting artists and musicians and dancers coming out in and out of our home. And so I was exposed to it from an early age. And it's one of the reasons I think I don't consider myself just a musician. I consider myself an interdisciplinary artist. I have a master's in visual and performing arts. And I think about music as an artist too. I don't think about it just from an auditory standpoint. I think about it from a visual standpoint too. I think about it from an experiential standpoint too. So almost like installative art. And I've, over the years, been really lucky to just study both musically and as an artist with amazing people. I was drawn very early in my teens to choral singing, and especially choral singing in Eastern European music. And I started to tour when I was 15 in terms of like during the summers singing, you know, with choirs. And if I could have made an actual living, I probably would just sing in a choir because there's nothing like it. I mean, just having that immersive experience with all these other voices, it's an incredible thing to do. Don't get me wrong, I love what we do, but there's something very unique about the experience of shared voice. So I studied with that. I was with an Eastern European women's ensemble through the two undergraduate degrees that I did, singing with them as well. And I studied chamber music composition for voice in addition to visual art. We've been able to, you know, learn from musicians in Turkey and India and various places that we've traveled to. You know, a lot of that has not been formal training. A lot of that has been experiential training, and collaborative is a really interesting way to learn. It's more of a back and forth as opposed to simply a receiving way of learning.
Thank you. And how about you, Jamal?
Like I said, I grew up in the South. I was born in Tennessee. My family's from Kentucky. I'm the only one born in Tennessee. Grew up in Florida, and musically, as long as I can remember, I was into music, collecting music. Donnie and Marie were my first loves.
Donnie and Marie?
Donnie Marie Osmond, the Osmonds. In my second grade, little kind of end of year book thing, I wrote, when I grow up, I want to be ... And I wrote, I want to be a Mormon and move to Utah so I can be with Donnie and Marie.
Oh, JJ, I didn't know this about you.
But then the next year, third grade, I discovered Kiss. And I instantly discarded Donnie and Marie completely and never went back.
It was downhill from there.
And then I was Kiss Army all the way at that point. And so, yeah, I think I bought my first guitar from, this is like the long history you asked, from working in the watermelon fields for a couple of summers, watermelon and cantaloupes, picking the watermelon, throwing a watermelon, catching a watermelon, throwing a watermelon, picking a watermelon. And I bought my first electric guitar, a Kramer, because of Eddie Van Halen, and instantly started a punk rock band and started playing punk rock music.
That's before you learned how to play.
Yeah, you don't have to learn how to play punk rock music, so you just turn it up. And so I started doing that. And then it started turning into psychedelic punk rock music. And then it just went totally psychedelic. And then I started playing. I played in for a while after that started wearing off in a just intonation polyrhythmic world music ensemble. So I started learning different polyrhythms and playing in odd time signatures and playing for belly dance ensembles. And so, you know, I've learned all kinds of different things.
Did you get any formal guitar training?
I didn't. I never have. I don't know how to read music. I still don't know how my scales. I don't know how to play guitar. So no, I've had no, I'm still a punk rocker at heart. I just kind of figure things out. And I've tried I went to Berkeley in 1999 for a summer course thinking maybe I would start learning theory and all that stuff and moving in that direction, but I couldn't do it.
Wow.
It's a block.
You play several different stringed instruments.
I do it all by ear pretty much.
Yeah. One of my stories about JJ is, I don't know about now, it's been a few years, but back in the day when you were coming to Rochester, New York a little bit more, we would invite you to come as a duo and asking you to tone it down because we would have a small setting and we were going to have the big band. And your idea of toning it down is amazing because you have so many toys and you love setting it up and getting the sound right. And you've always been like that?
Yeah, I think so. Pretty much. I've always liked it loud too.
It's intricate. You're using your feet and you're playing your guitar and you're singing and you turn your guitar into a drum.
Yeah, and I have drum pedals now. We've expanded even more with all kinds of other gadgets between the two of us now, but it's all just a deflection because I really don't know what I'm doing. So I'm just
That's the secret. I was going to say, when we looked at the video clip, your air guitar has really improved dramatically. Yeah, I know.
Believe me, I was a master air guitarist before I ever got a real guitar.
Well, now there's real finesse to it. So congratulations. Listen, talk about the next cut. We're gonna play another cut from your upcoming album.
Yes.
So talk a little about that before we play it.
Our words will be louder.
In a nutshell, we all know that we were in lockdown with COVID and at the same time experiencing a lot of what was coming up in terms of some of the Black Lives Matter movement and some of the protests that were happening. And even in our small town here, we experienced a really beautiful protest that happened and other people coming and yelling at the protesters and not wanting them there. And so
people with Confederate flags on the backs of their truck driving by and going and yelling out windows and stuff like that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll never forget this older man who apparently was affiliated with the local education system.
He was a school teacher.
Coming and yelling at some Black kids
who were his students.
And
how dare they?
You know, this is just what we were experiencing in our small town. And I, for a little while, struggled with is it even appropriate for me to write a song about this as a, you know, white Canadian woman living in the South, right? But I realized all any of us can do is use our collective voice right now. All we can do is offer support from our different perspectives. And so Dan from Jars had actually sent me this little voice memo of him just kind of like singing 30 seconds of this melody idea he had. And he was like, do something with this. And so it was kind of in my mind, and especially having come from this protest, I was like, this is all I know how to write about right now, is what I've just experienced.
This was mid-COVID too. We'd already been working on a ton of new songs and had almost a bunch of them done.
Yeah. And so basically I was like, well, I'm going to write this song, and brought it to the studio with those guys. And
we ran the lyrics by a couple of friends of ours that are Black. They go like, is this okay? Kind of yeah. thing. Like, and they were all like, awesome, please. Yes, do it. So we don't know if it's even okay.
With the advocacy work that we do and everything, we're close friends with people whose opinions we deeply respect and value and who we could ask for honest feedback with this.
Right.
And that was really helpful. And basically we brought it to the studio and worked it out and played through the song and then shared it with a bunch of our friends who are fellow advocacy workers and other musicians. Sure. And
it's a longer story.
It's a longer story, but
it was our first time getting around people after COVID, and we decided to go into Nashville
during COVID,
and like, let's do a recording session. And we went and recorded two songs with the band. It was the first time we played music with other people. Wow. And we just kind of created the rest of it in the studio. And then at the end of the day at 10 o'clock when we were done, the end section, which is this repeating chorus with a bunch of people singing, on the video that you'll see in a minute. That idea came as the very last idea, like 10 o'clock at night. We were already done, fried.
We were done. And I was like, oh no, there's this other part that needs to be right here.
So Moksha and Christy Lene, who's on the track and who's a good friend of ours and tours with us, went in to the vocal booth and they recorded the main gang vocal part like 3 or 4 times, and then they figured out the harmony and recorded that 3 or 4 times, and they figured out another harmony and recorded that 3 or 4 times, and then it was like this really big sounding like gang of people singing when it was only 2 of them. And then we were like, that kind of birthed the idea for the video. We can talk more about it after, about the reaction to the video after you play it, which is kind of interesting. But we had this idea of, let's get a bunch of people singing along in this video. So we had, like she said, different activist friends and rock star friends and stuff sent us videos of them singing. We used some of their vocal tracks. We got a gospel choir on it. It turned into this massive thing.
And through the whole thing too, I was like, I don't feel comfortable making money from this. Like, I didn't want that to be what the result was from it. So we decided to all profits to go to the Poor People's Campaign, which, if you don't know what that is, check it out. And
Reverend Barber's organization.
Reverend Barber's behind it. So we talked to them too, and they gave us permission to use footage of the work of Reverend Barber and the Poor People's Campaign.
And then Reverend Barber has been playing it, and we've performed it at a few Poor People's Campaign rallies since.
Yeah.
But we can talk more about it after you've seen it.
We will. So let's look at it. By the way, did any of what you just said make it into the audio? Is it just on the video, that last part you were talking about?
In terms of Reverend Barber's?
Yeah, or the groups that are...
That is just in the video, actually.
Right. So those of you who are here, you'll get to see that. And the audio, I'm sorry, but you'll get to hear a really nice...
Anyone who's listening to the podcast can check it out on our website in terms of the to watch the full video.
Oh,
and there you go. And can purchase the track there, that the proceeds go to the Poor People's Campaign.
Tell them your website again.
www.hudost.com.
Very well done. So let me set this up.
Just while you're figuring that out too, I can just share that now is when we're doing the pre-sale for the album that this is going to be on, so people can actually support our ability to put out the full album. The album doesn't come out officially until late November, but if you do the pre-sale, you can get it in late August.
And it's all kinds of goodies, including vinyl and shirts, and check it out.
Okay, here we go, I hope.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
This is the color of the day. I am tired of seeing from a sheltered place. Who am I to speak? I've never known your song, so I'll turn the other cheek. The world. I can say, use my voice if you wish, but I've never known my place. Hands up, do not shoot. No justice, no peace, no luxury, no loot. The world. The color of the day, raise it up like a flag whose own we will weigh. Our words are replaced, signs being shot by cameras, what to say.
Sure, we are gay, we are straight, we are students, we are parents, we are retirees. We are America, and we are here, and we ain't going nowhere.
Reverend Barber's stuff at the end still chokes me up.
For sure.
So those of you that are just listening, catch it on their website and see the video.
We remain so thankful to everybody who worked with us on that, because, you know, like I said before, I mean, the true power is through collective action and what we can do if we bring our voices together in that way. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like in the editing process, I saw that video so many times, and every time what Reverend Barber says at the end just makes me cry. So.
Thank you. JJ, you want to say some more about it?
Oh, just, you know, that video, you know, we put that video out, we timed it, kind of rushed it out. I mean, it happened very quickly, the writing, the recording, the video. Like, as soon as we went into the studio, we were like, let's get a camera guy in here and somebody that can document this. And then we had the idea about getting all the people, and we sent that out, and people sent us stuff, and they were like, we're timing this. We released it right before the election, you know, we released it in early November or late October, I forget, but like really leading up to the election with all these early voting ads, like vote now, vote early. Mm-hmm. And you just wouldn't believe some of the comments we got on there, especially Jars of Clay, leading back around to Jars of Clay, because we did that in their studio. They posted it on their page and they had hundreds and hundreds of comments from people like, I thought you guys were Christians. I can't believe you're supporting this video. And
people just posting Trump 2020. You know,
Trump 2020 and like, you're liberal, blah, blah, blah. And like, they were just getting it. We're like,
and the crazy thing was,
this is not a Christian video. Like, you know, like.
Yeah, the crazy thing was, I'm like, it's astonishing to me that they were like, that they took us with this message. Like, look what Reverend Barber is saying at the very end. He's saying, we are all of these things. this is everything. This is everyone. And yet that's like automatically assumed to be anti-Christian. And that, you know.
Or anti, you know, and it's assumed to be anti-Trump or whatever.
Just for the record too, I mean, a lot of other arts organizations put out the video, like the Woody Guthrie Center and Museum co-hosted it with us, Catamount Arts, the Levitt Foundation put it out. I don't know if you noticed, yeah, Oz Arts. I don't know if you noticed in that, I don't know if you know who Gangsta Grass is, but they were one of the groups that were in there. They were the guys in the alley, you know, and they have quite a following. They put it out. None of those had negative comments on them. And the same thing from our page. We got some a little bit later, but it was like
we got some people
the
Jars
guys were the ones who, right, because they were Christian, got these negative comments with it. And it was a real awakening. And I mean, they were amazing about it. We felt terrible. We were just like, oh my gosh, do you regret putting this video out? And they were like, no, this stands, this is what we stand for. This is what we believe in. They can respond however they want. It's not our problem. So they were,
they're used to it.
They were really big about it, but it was definitely an awakening to us. But yeah, everything else was like the whole thing of just like the people posting literally just Trump 2020. We were like, oh my gosh, what does that even say? You know?
So, you know, it's sometimes it's easy to talk about inclusivity, but then when you really walk your talk, Kathleen just said backlash is tough.
Yeah, but you know, the fact is like, for me, it was a real test of like, if we don't have the integrity to stand up for what it really means to have a collective voice and to have that shared space, and we can't stand for that, then it's not worthwhile. We have to at least have that bravery to have that kind of outspoken inclusivity.
Right.
So,
right. And you're doing it through music, and your spiritual path is that's incorporated. But you know, there are spiritual traditions and people that are doing it, creating their own path. You know, I think there's a push-pull, and there's a move afoot of nothing's more important than inclusivity and honoring who you are and being accepting of all others. So I grew up in a time where that wasn't the way to go. It was much more exclusive. Everything from my religious background, my ethnic background, racial background, it was the way women were treated. There was a lot of, you're supposed to be in this certain group and the groups aren't supposed to mix. You know, we joked earlier about my going to Vanderbilt for medical school. And, you know, great school, I had a good education. Why was it white? You know, and we're in the same town as Meharry Medical College, and times are changing, but it's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, even Nashville has shifted a huge amount in the last 10 years. It's changed. And I mean, I think that's happening in more places than we realize, but all of this is going to go through different growth spurts and different levels of discomfort. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, there was the whole thing of like, we're all the same. It doesn't matter what you, where you come from or what you are. And now it's like, no, it does. We're not all the same. You know, it does matter where you come from, but it doesn't mean there has to be a lack of like peace or sharing or, you know, inclusivity, you know. So it's, but it all, there's always going to be this pendulum swing when there's growth, you know? And so, I mean, I think especially like in that time period when we put out that song, everybody was seeing some serious ugliness coming out in our, in especially in the U.S. in terms of around a lot of this. And
it's scary. I mean, we had a closer, it got to the election around here, the more, you know, like I was saying, the more people were driving around with the flags in their trucks. And we had one of those signs in our front lawn that was like, you know, we believe that science is real, Black Lives Matter. You know, I don't know if you've seen those yard signs, but we had that. And we're like, we're going to take that down for a little while here. Like, we don't want people targeting our house. Like, there's a liberal house, you know, and torch them or whatever. You know, you just don't know at this point. People are crazy.
Right. Well, thank you for that. behind it. It's really moving. I want to give people a chance. Any questions, put them in the chat or raise your hand, or any comments anybody would like to make. Christina?
Well, I just want to say it was a wonderful introduction, a beautiful podcast. Thank you all for being here. And it was just a pleasure to learn more about your background and your work. And you have another fellow traveler on the path who feels and resonates, and a fellow artist who feels the same way. Although I'm in dance, I resonated with everything you're saying, and more power to you to do it your way. I mean, then it's a triumph, right? And it shows others that there's another way, and that light shines brightly in the dark. If you ever want to do anything, if you ever want to do anything Eastern European or Mediterranean or North African or, you know, Middle Eastern, just let me know, because that would be awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that and for what you're doing.
Suvan?
Thank you very much, and congratulations that we actually talk about having an effect on the world around us. And I really admire you two or your whole group. Now, maybe pulling your yard sign out so you don't get firebombed is a good idea, especially with the little one around. See, it, being as I'm not a musician or a dancer or can't sing, I think you have a great set of tools there, and I'm glad you're using them.
Thank you. I'll just, in response to that, share that, like, the work that we've done with One has taught us a lot, because it's bipartisan. And living where we live, our job, we're the basically like
for the congressional
district reps for One
for Kentucky.
And so that means having meetings with Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell and Brett Guthrie and, you know, others.
We go to DC and to their offices and their local offices as well.
And so, I mean, the reality is, creating opposition is not how to heal anything or have change actually happen. The way to do it is to find the common ground and then offer routes of expansion and growth.
Either that, or we just learn to hang your issues up on the door before going in, and then, because you're dealing with issues that are not or that shouldn't be political.
I think the, you know, Sufi path and the path of advocacy, if you really want to grow, it is actually a path of humility. You definitely have to eat some humble pie. And one of the things, when I first was like walking down the Sufi path, one of the things that was shared with me was that the way of the Sufi was to try to see equally from the perspective of everyone in the room. And I think that's really the work through whatever path we're taking with it. And that's how we can really change. We can change others and change ourselves in the process.
You know, I just want to interject that your music does that. There are a lot of people that will only listen to one genre of music, or this genre of music is better than another genre. But your music just puts it all together, and it's really moving and attractive. So,
well, that, or we have multiple musical personality disorder.
Yes, that too. That too. But I remember, you know, one of my favorite artists is Bela Fleck.
Yeah, and he's awesome.
He has Grammys across more genres than any other musician, I believe.
And do you know his wife too? Because she's
Abigail.
Amazing.
She is amazing, right?
She's amazing. And not only she, I mean, she's like, for any of you who haven't checked her out, we know her and we've worked with her other main music partner, Kai Welsh. We did some work with him just this last year too. And she's amazing because she's like a killer banjo player. She also like sings and speaks perfect Mandarin. And, yes. You know, right. I mean, she's just like, and she has a law degree. Like she's just wild. So check her out if you don't know.
But even then, it's like, you know, I was an amateur banjo player too. I mean, Bela Fleck, when he plays jazz banjo, he plays jazz banjo. When he plays classical banjo, it's classical banjo. Bluegrass banjo is bluegrass banjo. And he crosses all these genres. You put it all together into your own genre. And that's just quite a feat. But artists like that, like you and like Bela and Abigail, it's really making it live. Making it alive that we are all one and we can appreciate all of this. I mean, I heard Bela say he got attracted, I think it was the theme song of the Beverly Hillbillies. And he just said, I want to do that. That was
that's
it.
Really funny. I didn't
that's
know
a
that.
Riot. Right. That. That's what attracted him. And he's brought the banjo to where nobody could ever believe a banjo could ever go. So I'm just bringing that up because I think you don't just switch genres, you created one and you're walking your talk in your music and in your life. Tell people what hudost means.
Well, hu is like the Turkish om. It's the universal breath and sound. And dost is true friend. So it's the true friend of that universal breath and sound.
So if we can squeeze in one more cut before we say goodbye, but I have a dilemma.
Okay.
So I was going to play something from your Sufi Kirtan album.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am who I am. In my debate,
I know where this is going.
Yes, of course you know where it's going. So you are the artists, and I will do what you request.
Uh-oh. I'm not prepped for that, though. What other song would we like played? Do you have another idea in mind?
Oh, sure. My favorite
song. I know the intricacy of that brain.
Yes, I know. My favorite song. But it's going, that goes back a ways.
Oh. You know what? Go for it. Play your favorite song. That's okay. This is old school. This is like one of the first songs I ever wrote, honestly.
Yeah, you remember what year it was? Because I can't remember what year.
You know, like 1963 approximately.
This was, it's on their album Seedling, which people can still get. Can people still get the album?
Yes, they can through our website.
The album came out in 2006, yes. Seedling, that was our second album. It was really our first album because we were already working on that. All those songs, and then we had the idea that we were under the name Moksha Jamal at that point with our own songs, and then we had this idea to record a album of Sufi songs with Linda Worcester, mm-hmm. called ourselves Hudost for this one project, and then that kind of blew up. So then we decided just to change the name to Hudost for when we released our album of songs, which was Seedling, which came out second, even though we had recorded it first.
This is the kind of stuff that people who collect huge amounts of records love that info, but the rest of us don't.
You guys love it. It's good info, isn't it?
It's great info, yes. We were doing stuff together, and your album came out. I got it right away, and you wanted to know what we thought. Kathleen listened to it first, then I started listening. And about a week later, I was talking to you and you said, so what do you think? And I said, I can't tell you yet because I can't get past the first cut. I just put it on repeat and I listened to it. I was driving all over the place back in those days and I could never get past the first cut. This is like the universe talking to me. That's the first thing that came in when I listened to this. It feels like an invitation that's so sweet. So thank you for letting me play it. I'll see if I can get it up here so we can really do it.
This is my earth.
Thank you so much for letting me play that. It brought back a lot of nice memories.
Thank you. We haven't listened to that in a really long time, too, so it was nice to hear it.
Yeah, you probably haven't played it in a really long time.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you. Well, this has been a real treat. I really appreciate the give and take and the ease of being with you.
Thank you. Well, we love you and send hugs this way, and this is a wonderful group to share with. So
we are easy, but we're not cheap.
Okay, on that word,
I got Zainab out, didn't I? Right.
Please support Hudost, and you know where to find them, and enjoy their music. When is your new album due out?
So the album officially comes out November 19th, but if you, that's why I was saying, if you do the pre-sale, you get it in August, at the end of August. Oh,
love you.
Love you too.
If you find yourself enjoying our podcasts, please do us a favor and spread the word. Tell a friend about it. Give us a review on iTunes or post it on social media. If you or someone you know would like to participate in a future podcast, please connect with us through the Contact Us page. See our events calendar page for dates to our next live podcast recordings. We'd love for you to participate and ask questions. And be sure to check out Joel Lessie's podcast, Unraveling Religion, on your favorite podcast app. Alchemical Dialogues are live and unscripted conversations recorded on Zoom, brought to you by the great folks of Amber Light International, a nonprofit organization co-founded by Henry Curtella, MD, and Kathleen Fitzpatrick, LCSW. We choose topics from our current social and cultural climate, with an emphasis on humanism and spirituality.